random encounter at a broadcasting facility. A shared interest and love of all things Marvel.
Excelsior!
A misinterpreted program title. And behold, a podcast is born.
Peter Melnick.
Podcaster and comic book enthusiast. And
Eddie Wilson!
Upstate New York radio announcer, still with an inordinate amount of catching up to do.
Peter, what are you doing?
Here we go with a new episode of The Marvelists.
Hi, I'm Dave Gonzalez.
I'm Jonah Robinson.
We're co-authors of MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios.
And you're listening to The Marvelists with Peter Melnick and Eddie Wilson.
Welcome, everyone, to The Marvelists, the Marvel Universe podcast. I'm Peter Melnick.
And I'm Eddie Wilson.
And joining us on the other end of the tin can and string, we are joined with Eddie.
Oh, yes, me and you and
the guy behind the tree.
That's exactly right.
No, we are joined with Dave and Joanna, the authors of MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios, coming soon to a local bookstore near you.
But to be more complete,
Amazon as well.
No, Joanna Robinson and Dave Gonzalez, as you just heard in the intro. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
So now, first off, Dave and Joanna, we'll go with Joanna first and then Dave second. In regards to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, what was your introduction to Marvel as a whole?
Like in films or in comic books?
Yes.
In general. Honestly, yes, in general. In general.
The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. I would say my first interaction with the world of Marvel storytelling would be the X-Men animated series from the 90s. That was something I was really, really into as a kid. And, you know, and then, of course, as the live-action X-Men films came out, as we got Spider-Man, et cetera, and then, of course, everything launching off officially in the MCU with Iron Man, I was there every opening weekend for every MCU movie. But and then comic book-wise, I came to comic books a little late in life because I could not tell you why I couldn't get into them as a kid. It's not that I didn't think they were cool. I just, my brain couldn't make the art and the dialogue flow together properly. And then something in my brain settled or hardened or whatever. And when I was a young adult, all of my friends who were into the same sort of genre storytelling that I was into were into comic books, and they were constantly pressing comic books into my hand, et cetera, et cetera. And so I read Sandman, I read Squirrel Girl, I read Jessica Jones. Sorry, Sandman's not Marvel, obviously, but like Squirrel Girl, Jessica Jones, mm-hmm. like all this sort of stuff. And I got really into it starting in my 20s, yeah.
How hard is it to get into X-Men after being an X-Men fan of the animated series? Because I went in first animated, and then I tried to get into the comics, and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. You know, shout out to Jay and Miles, Explain the X-Men. But it's like, there is so much confusing continuity where I'm just like, yeah, we're good. I'm not going to give this a try unless I start from the very beginning, you know?
I think it teaches you to, like, let go of having to know. And that's a good tool to have when you're reading comic books, especially storylines that stretch back that far, is that sometimes you need to let go of having to know everything. And if there's something that confuses you, you can look it up, or hopefully there's a helpful asterisk for you or something like that. But I think, you know, we're nerdy completionists, so we want to know everything. But I think sometimes with comics, you have to let that impulse go, you know?
It's funny. A friend of the show, Daniel Kibble-Smith, has this one tweet about the whole X-Men, you know, he says a lot of comic fans will get asked what a new reader's first comic should be and suggest Watchmen or Dark Knight or Kingdom Come, when their own actual first comic was part 9 of a 17 crossover of the most confusing X-Men story ever. It's so accurate. It's like, yeah, you know, right when you come in, like I got in on Deadpool at like number 36 of the Daniel Way run, and it's just like, good enough.
Yep, here we are.
And not to sound like a debate or anything like that, so Dave, same question?
Yeah, mine actually runs into needing to know everything as well, because I started, I was aware of superheroes and definitely animated series and everything, but I started getting into comics first from a shop called Time Warp 2 in Louisville, Colorado, that I don't think is around anymore. But I would go in twice weekly to pick up new issues, and about 6 months after I started doing that, I was really keying into Spider-Man, because they were starting the Trial of Peter Parker series, which would eventually become the Clone Saga, which would keep me hooked for 2 years. with titles every week because they were passing between Web of, Spectacular, Amazing, and then I think just the Spider-Man title in general.
You forgot Unlimited.
It was a pretty consistent story, and it was referencing the past of Spider-Man. So really quickly, as soon as I was able to get a hold on the Marvel Essentials books, Spider-Man Volume 1 and 2, I just started at the beginning and went all the way through catching up with all the Spider-Man storylines. And I really focused on that character until about way after the Clone Saga. But once Ultimate came out with Bendis, I was right back in it again. And the comic buying has always kind of come first for me. And then once the movie started off, I was one of those fans that was like, I am glad everybody's enjoying this thing that I had known about for a long period of time. But also, that Green Goblin looks like a Power Rangers villain. So, you know, I had the big opinions to go along with my decade of expertise at that point. And that's how I got into the comics and then the movies.
Because you had all that experience behind you, all that years of practice reading, it's familiarizing, and be like, all right, come on now.
So movies can't be that hard. I've been reading this, you know, a different story every week for years and years.
You know,
I know Dave's origin story is the Clone Saga. Like, I hope all of your listeners have seen Across the Spider-Verse, but I was so excited to see the Clone Saga reference for Dave. I was, like, thrilled for him. So, yeah, it was really fun.
I've been waiting for Ben Reilly to be on screen all my life. I'm so happy.
I love how it was Tom Lyle, Tom Lyle, Ben Reilly showing up on the big screen and right down to the dark, grim, grittiness of it all. I love the hell out of that with Samberg.
Yeah, I like that they didn't have to make it a joke. He just could be what he could be because I'm sure if your readers are keeping up with Spider-Man, I do not approve of what current-day Ben Reilly Chasm is. So I'm glad we got the classic before we got the other ones.
I'm curious to see what's going on with Ben Reilly now, because as of my reading of Spider-Man, since No Way Home came out, I've been reading Spider-Man. I'm currently now up to the year 2001. I'm reading everything. So I've read Marvel Team-Up, Spectacular, et cetera, et cetera. And like I said, I'm up to 2001, and Ben's still dead. Poor guy.
Oh, you've got some surprises coming your way.
Mary Jane just came back from the dead.
Most of them, I really, really like the Dan Slott run. That, you know, starts kicking off and goes in crazy directions, because I think a lot of the things that it took the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies a little bit to learn, but the Tom Spider-Man comic books, just by virtue of being around for so long, have done is it's like you could go off in a crazy direction and we'll forgive you if there's a reason we went in that direction. So I'm hoping that, you know, Spider-Man continues to have weird offshoots like Superior.
I want,
but hope in the weird movie space would be great for me.
Now, if you were the one to see this happen, see Superior Spider-Man happen on the big screen, are you going to bring Alfred Molina back as Dr. Octagonopus and then throw him alongside Peter Parker?
I mean, I think it would be a great reason to do it and not have to deal with any sort of wacky de-aging. And then you just got a voiceover, an Alfred Molina voiceover on a new Peter Parker body. I would go for it 100%.
Mm. Great, great. All right, so fast forward with both of you, Joanna first. From your beginnings to what and how you came into doing what you're doing now in this forthcoming release.
Yeah, I started covering film and television a long time ago for a great pop culture website called Fajiba. And during my time there, maybe a little bit after, I met Dave through mutual friends. And Dave, I knew to be a huge comic book fan, and I wanted to know more. So we started a podcast actually called The Thought Bubble, where, you know, Dave as an expert and me as sort of a novice would talk about comic book questions or comic book properties. And that was really fun and really educational for me. And then I started writing for Vanity Fair. I wrote there for about 8 years. And when I was there, they asked me to do a cover story for Vanity Fair on the MCU, which means they went out to Atlanta and I was on the set for Endgame and I interviewed all the actors and et cetera, et cetera. And I got to sit down for a long time with Kevin Feige. And everything I learned there, the story that I put together for that cover story, was so fascinating to me. But at the same time, There's only so much room in a magazine article, and we want to tell, you know, the entire story, as much of the stories we can get our hands on. And so when it came to writing this book, this MCU history, I could think of no one better to help me than Dave, who had been helping me understand comics for years at that point. So we had worked on other shows together, but it was really fun to come back to work on this. Dave doing just incredible amounts of research. I had access to people to interview them, and then eventually brought on Gavin Edwards, our third co-author, incredible, who had had a lot of experience sort of weaving everything together into a narrative, and that brought the whole meal together. But yeah, we started in 2019, shortly after Endgame and the end of Game of Thrones, which is something we spent a long time covering, the two of us. And then COVID happened, and we still really, like, we've been working on this for a really long time through a lot of very strange circumstances, and I cannot even actually believe this book exists at this point. So yeah.
Well, yeah, with that all thrown in, that big old monkey wrench that threw the world upside down, how long would this kind of was projected to have taken to, you know, put together?
I think we were aiming for like a year and a half to 2 years max, right, Dave?
Sure.
Yeah, there was an understanding that this book was going to be slightly more oral history based at first, and that if that was the case, it would really just become an issue of like a, you know, properly ordering interviews into a narrative. But then when we were allowed to open it up to a history after getting some interviews during lockdown, that just expanded the scope of topics that we got to talk about. Because, you know, interview people are going to say what they can without getting in trouble, but you could do a whole bunch of research to uncover the real story. And I think that sort of helped us expand the book beyond initially what we thought it was going to be, which was this, you know, not a complete, promo job, but it was pretty amazing when we started this book that, like, Endgame was coming out. And those first few months, it's like, well, this is the biggest thing ever. This is the biggest thing that's ever happened to movies. So it was interesting to be able to continue the narrative beyond that, because I think in our pitch, that's sort of where our book ended, like a what's next for phase four, and then suddenly being able to expand to include all of phase four and picking up all the stories that we got to insert into the history before that was really enriching. So we would have, I think we could have probably come out with a version of this book on the timeline that we were expecting, but we just started finding so much that there was always more time to make it better.
Now this is a much, much better version of that story, and much more complete. And I think also, a byproduct, COVID was horrible for everyone. And what was also true is that the film industry shut down, so a lot of filmmaking professionals were bored in their houses filming to talk to us about Marvel because they had nothing else that they were doing at the time. So that was an interesting part of the whole story, and I think I think that pause in work for a lot of people made them very nostalgic for when, you know, other projects that they were working on. So that was really interesting to talk about the long history of Marvel.
Now, in regards to some of the people you interviewed, some of the actors involved with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, did you guys speak with Mark Ruffalo and Tom Holland? And if so, how many times did they accidentally spoil things?
Mark, yes. Tom, no. Mark has never spoiled something in front of me. Though he was...
I mean, he was in a spoiler situation. It's just not a spoiler anymore.
Yeah, that's true. He was very anxious to talk to me on the set of Endgame. He was in his, like, motion capture dots. It was a whole thing. But, yeah, that's everyone knows that story now.
Was the spoiler that he just saw Citizen Kane and was, like, excited to talk about the sled?
I think he had just seen The Sixth Sense, and he was like, did you know? Because he was dead the whole time.
We at The Marvelists are very pleased to announce our super new sponsor, Marvel Strike Force. Marvel Strike Force is an incredible mobile game, a comic book fan's dream. Marvel Strike Force is a mobile squad RPG that allows you to battle with your favorite team of superheroes and supervillains in a fight to save the universe against threats like Doctor Doom and Apocalypse. Your goal is to power up your favorite characters to complete missions, unlock gear and other resources, and beat other players in PvP modes such as Alliance War and Real-Time Arena. As we speak, they are enjoying their 6-year anniversary. You know what that means. Free stuff just for signing up via our unique link in the description. The anniversary consists of weekly events and bonuses. If you complete each event, you can receive special rewards and skins. Make sure to log in each day and each week to take advantage of all of the new characters that are being released specifically for this event. This will be Marvel Strike Force's most generous event to date, so don't miss out. We have received a unique promo code for every new user. Please follow our link in the description and use the promo code MAXPOOL, MAXPOOL. Once again, thank you so much to Marvel Strike Force for sponsoring this episode.
Now, in regards to, you know, some of the stuff in regards to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, a lot is changing. Like you guys mentioned, you know, talking about Phase 4 and stuff like that. Was there any discussion in the book about, you know, reactions to how, you know, a lot of, you go online, you see people's reaction to Phase 4, the quote-unquote hive mind going on, people moaning and kvetching about Phase 4. Did you cover any of that? And, like, the fact that, you know, a lot of these fans, many of them maybe have high hopes, like it's trying to be like Endgame, like they keep expecting that and being disappointed that it's not that?
I don't think we covered so much from the fan angle, but that did inform especially the Phase 4 parts of the book, because what really happened is everything, Marvel spent so much time through Endgame building up their internal systems of how they would work a story to get like the best version of that story. And then immediately after Endgame, the directive from Disney top down is like, we want more of this. And the problems with Phase 4, at least that we came to find, were really scaling problems. Like, you can't clone Kevin Feige into another Ben Reilly and have him do the same job. So they tried to, I think, rush a lot of the productions and the stories into production. And that, in turn, sort of messed with their internal timeline of what they thought Phase 4 was going to be. So it was constantly Marvel trying to stay ahead of Indiana Jones-like, ahead of a giant boulder that was chasing them down, which was just the demand for more Marvel content. And I don't think we draw any straight conclusions on if that was good or bad, but we present the reality of what happens and then let people's critical minds do the work for them. So whatever opinions you have about Phase 4, if you're listening to this, is right. Here's the background of why it happened that way.
Now, personally...
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's some hard data around that outside of fan opinion or even, like, you know, the narrow silos of online buzz that we read. You know, there's box office numbers, there's, you know, critical reviews, there's internal conversation about the direction of certain projects, ways things get delayed or moved around, all of that. Again, the COVID factor can't be understated when it comes to putting Phase 4 together. That was a huge part of everything that happened. And so I think Marvel trying to crash course learn how to make television while Disney is demanding a massive churn of content from them, to just to yes and Dave, has so much to do with what has happened. And then in terms of those like Endgame level expectations, I think that was on Marvel's mind the whole time they were leading up to Endgame. They're like, all right, how do we follow Thanos? How do we follow the snap? How do we deal with that? And you know, they had some plans in place, a lot of which didn't go according to plan because of things out of their control, like the tragic death of Chadwick Boseman, or you know, any number of things. All of their carefully laid plans sort of wobbled. So again, we're not passing a judge. We have our own personal opinions on Phase 4, but our job of the book is not really to either praise it or damn it, but yeah, to sort of try to, if someone's like, Marvel, I love those Marvel movies, what happened? Why don't I love them as much anymore? Or why aren't the TV shows as like consistently good as I want them to be? We're hoping that this book answers that question for you.
Well, with a book like this, an undertaking like this, I guess the way you lay it out, chapters, et cetera, has to be in a timeline fashion. Otherwise, it's probably not going to make sense, correct? Or would you handle it in a character-by-character way? I don't think so.
You could always Pulp Fiction it.
Well. I think we start with a time. We definitely start at the beginning, or specifically for this, we start in the 90s with Ike Perlmutter and Avi Arad gaining control of Marvel. And then we start, going through phases. Within the phases, we sort of bounce around by subject because there are specific stories that we wanted to tell. And so we try to keep, some casting stuff in phase one and some, art department expansion stuff in phase one. But if we're talking about something that requires us to bounce around, that's one of the things that Gavin Edwards is really great at doing.
Yeah.
Is sort of helping us take all of our ideas and opinions and stream them into something that's just incredibly fun to read. Not that I don't love reading Joanna or narcissistically myself, but Gavin's the one that has the magic in that sense to make it all flow. I'm very happy with how the book flows, and it's just an enjoyable read if you are into Marvel.
Yeah, I think, for example, in phase four, we have a whole VFX chapter, and it's in phase four because that's when the VFX and Marvel conversation sort of started to break out into mainstream fandom, with people either critiquing the VFX or the VFX workers themselves wanting to talk about their experience, et cetera. But I don't think you can write that VFX chapter without going back in time a little bit and sort of talking about how we got here. So I agree that, no thanks to us, probably thanks to Gavin, there is a tremendous amount of clarity in this book, but it wasn't always easy to make sure that we weren't like circling back on ourselves too many times or something like that. But I think at the end of the day, we managed to make it flow. And I like the way that those themed chapters exist in the phases where they belong, in the phases where they most matter to what Marvel was doing.
I just think that if you were able to unlock and unravel, and no spoiler here, don't say it, if between yourselves and Gavin, unravel the X-Men timeline movie-wise and make it all make sense.
It doesn't.
I think you've got an instant bestseller on your hands.
I mean, the X-Men are all over the book with the, big question at the end where it's like, we haven't seen them again. They've had Fox for quite a long time, and we're not going to jump back into the X-Men necessarily until apparently Deadpool 3. So we bring it as far up as the Multiverse of Madness, obviously, because we got some X-Players showing up there, and a very interesting music cue in Ms. Marvel, if people want to check that out. We cover the looming mutants, but then there's also Kevin Feige, when he was announcing the Phase 4 lineup, literally ended the presentation with no time for mutants. So that's sort of the status there. I would love for them to unify the X-Men timeline, especially now that we're in the multiverse saga. It seems like a good place for it. But honestly, I don't know if they're going to be able to write it, or even if they should. Maybe X-Men is just exists in those multiple iterations that allows you to do weird things.
Maybe it's exasperated.
Allows Logan to exist and Deadpool 3 to exist.
Yeah.
Well, in regards to, casting with the X-Men stuff, like, nothing's been announced. Like, I've heard, talks with friends. One comment made was kind of how a lot of these actors, like, you're seeing Hugh Jackman return as Wolverine. You're seeing,
right,
in the previous movie, Sir Patrick Stewart reprised the role of Charles Xavier. And it's kind of funny because it feels like they had like these contracts and like X amount of things they could do. I feel like what they're doing. No, ha ha ha. Ha.
X amount, X, I get that.
Da, 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 da. But in regards to that, you're seeing all of these actors reprise their role again. I feel like it's because, hey, we're just honoring those contracts. And then once you get all those things out of the way, that's why maybe, in Secret Wars, we'll end up seeing whoever reprised the role of Cyclops or Storm, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe that's why, we haven't had any casting announcements for the future version, the future iterations of the Uncanny X-Men, or Astonishing, or Amazing, etc.
Bring me the Beyonder.
I don't think that Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart had any more contractual obligations. Hugh Jackman just like cannot say no to the Wolverine cause for some reason. But what I do think is interesting, what I think that exactly what you're talking about in terms of let's pull Patrick Stewart in, let's pull Hugh Jackman back, is something that Kevin Feige has always been really good at, and especially really good in this recent like acquisition, merging everything together era, is sort of holding on to what works and letting go of what doesn't, but trying to hold on to everything and embrace everything so everything feels coherent. Something we like to talk about is this like mentality of Feige fix it. Kevin Feige like will look at a movie like Thor: The Dark World, a movie that everyone pretty much agrees belongs at the bottom of the Marvel Cinematic Universe rankings, pluck a sequence out of that and put it into Endgame and make it extremely poignant between Thor and his mother. And then all of a sudden that movie feels relevant or important, or he's bringing characters out from, the Incredible Hulk movie into, our current MCU properties. And so I think that, or he's like, Charlie Cox is Daredevil. Yes, you say Iron Fist, not so fast. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's picking and choosing what has worked under other people's guidance or hasn't worked under his own, and trying to make it all feel like coherent and it belongs and stuff like that. And that gets harder and harder for everyone at Marvel to do the more and more content they put out. I was listening to your coverage of the first episode of Secret Invasion, and you guys were talking about this idea of like the multiverse saga stories existing at the same time as the Secret Invasion stories, and how it shouldn't be that confusing to viewers, because this comic books have done this for eons, right? But various events are happening simultaneously across different stories. Mm. And that, your point was, you don't have to read everything, so you don't have to get confused. But I think the problem that Marvel has been running into recently, which goes back to what made them so special in the first place, is because it's so interconnected, they want you to watch everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then it starts to feel like homework for people when it's so much all the time. And I think that's a problem we're running into, not for the diehards, but for the casual, because Marvel did that insane thing where they broke beyond the core fandom to massive wide audiences. So when you think about the casual fans, how are they handling all of this? And can they hold the Fantastic Four at the same time as the X-Men, at the same time as the Avengers, at the same time as everything else? So I think that's something that they're currently grappling with.
And let me tell you, folks, Secret Invasion is most certainly homework for me, but I digress.
Well, it is too. Part of the thing is maybe risk is involved there, is that you're hoping that, it goes into this, it goes into that, and maybe your curiosity is peaked and you want to seek out more and that kind of thing. So, yeah, you have this segment of the population that's going to do that. And like we've encountered with many an interview, that fans who now are more aware of things like a Marvel movie, of cosplayers, all that stuff, just want to and care about the movies themselves and where they take them. And that's enough.
Right.
But going back to Dark World, first of all, Malekith and...
Boo.
I was going to say that the full again title of the book, let's have that out again. Or is it a working title or not a final title? You know what I mean?
MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios.
Okay. I assume that since it's, of course, everything is in a set time frame, so it could very well be in a year or two, dated. Do you want to possibly add a little dot, 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 and then in parentheses, so far?
It was originally... it is already at the printers. But originally it was just called The Rise of Marvel Studios, and we went back and forth on that by being like, that, implies a fall at some point, but it also doesn't... It also seems like we're on the upper end of the build, and it was hard to predict while we were locking down the title if that was going to maintain, so we switched it over to The Reign, because I do think the run from Iron Man to Endgame is something that, at least in the world of cinema, we're not going to see happen at that level. That's our original Star Wars trilogy level event where Marvel was able to pull this off for three phases, something they made up. But they made it up, and they executed it, and they did their whole plan. And those, by the time we got to the Infinity War and Endgame and Captain Marvel and Black Panther, they were all churning out billion-dollar movies. So that is definitely a time period where Marvel was, I think, indisputably at the top of the pile in Hollywood. Now, the future uncertain. I think they're still a big power player, and I think they have a big strength in all of their vast IP and this built-in idea that an Avengers movie is going to make $1 billion. They have just decided to give us a break from that and try some other things, and that might be affecting the bottom line a little bit.
Well, Dave, I think that was a damn good answer to the question. You know, and going the range that you said, Iron Man to Endgame, boom. And otherwise, I would have said maybe, you know, there were just too many characters to fit in the title. And, you know, the font had to shrink down a little more, hard to read, whatever. I'm good with that, too.
Oh, Eddie.
Thank you. Moving right along.
Baron Studebaker, yeah. In regards to, you know, just what is it that you like about the MCU in general? Like, what connects you guys to the overall experience of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
I think when I think about the Marvel movies that work the best for me, you know, my favorite, I always like to, it's true that my favorite is Winter Soldier, but like in terms of the movies that I like the most, there, you could not have had the MCU any earlier than when it came because of that visual effects angle that is everyone likes to talk about these days. Like, you needed the technology to be in a certain place in order to be able to deliver these stories in a way, and this is a term that in the early days of Marvel Studios, they like to talk about a lot, which is like plausibility, make it grounded, make it feel real, make it like, you know, we're talking about bigger than life heroes, or in some case, Norse gods or whatever, a man out of time. All these things are massive, but you want to make it feel real. And the way you do that is to get audiences to buy into the characters. And so when I think of some of these characters, when I think about, you know, my personal fave, Steve Rogers, or, you know, like any number of them, I get really emotional thinking about them. There's like, there, you know, there's like the cool final act, like, you know, whatever, big fight scene that Marvel will always have. You'll have your Battle of New York, you'll have your giant splash page end game, all the heroes fighting at once stuff. But if you're not emotionally invested in those characters, like, it doesn't matter. And that, I mean, that is something that Feige and everyone who works for him picked up, going back to, like, you know, Stan Lee and the rest of them, where they were just sort of like character first, story after. And so to give us these very like real feeling flawed heroes and get us to emotionally buy in. And so when you think about like recent Disney Plus shows, like, I'm all in on WandaVision and I'm all in on Loki, partially because I already knew those characters and partially because they're on like a really interesting emotional journey. We're not origin storying anything. We're deep into an emotional journey. And then some of the other shows that they've launched have been less successful, either because we're watching an origin story because we've seen a million times before, or the story entirely just got away from them, or whatever the case may be. But I'm having a little bit more trouble latching on to those characters emotionally as I was to the characters that they launched in their original run, because it doesn't feel like they have as much time as they need to sort of dig deep into those feelings. Dave, what do you love about Marvel movies?
Well, as a fan of movies, like, it's kind of amazing that they, instead of being like, we're going to do, like, even we're going to do a Superman movie, we're going to do a Batman movie, like, even Spider-Man, like, that's a huge property. People know who Spider-Man and the Hulk are before the MCU exists. But the fact that they were able to basically launch this gigantic film series with Iron Man, who most people would have told you if they knew one Iron Man story, it was Demon in a Bottle. So it's this alcoholic guy who wears a, you know, mech suit. We're able to sort of launch that to now, you know, we have Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, where Michael Douglas is just like steering a biological ship by putting his hands in goo. And you've like made Michael Douglas come to that level of plausibility. So I agree with what Joanna's saying, but the inner comic book fan of me, and maybe this is, again, because I got into comics around the Clone Saga, which includes a lot of weird trash sides. I'm going to be here when the lights come out. I'm so happy, instead of having this conversation with people who are reading comics, I'm having this conversation with people who are seeing gigantic movies. Like, we get to talk about the Goo. We get to talk about a whole bunch of Jack Kirby imagery being adapted to visuals. And we get to talk about whether or not that's being done correctly. So the way they were able to transfer the reverence for their comic book history into the movies, in terms of the fiction of it all, caring about the characters, like Joanna was saying, but also blowing out the world building to be to the point where anything goes, is really kind of great for me. I'm kind of sad that they still have some of their opinions about who deserves credit for creating things that they carried over from the very bad comic book system. But hopefully that's going to improve as time goes on.
Now, in regards to some of the stuff that you were doing with, you know, speaking with the creators, speaking with the actors and whatnot, were you able to do a little bit more stuff, like see things with Marvel Studios? Like, you know, they drew the curtain back and, you know, maybe like got to see footage of things like, you know, screen tests and whatnot of early stuff, or no?
So, I mean, so we should say that initially when we, you know, got this book deal, we were in conversation with Disney, with Marvel about it, you know, and they were like, yeah, you know, that's fine that you're doing that. And then what happened was, it turned out they were making their own book, and so they didn't really want us to write our book, because why would they help us write our book when they're going to make money off their own book? Mm-hmm. And the book that they were putting together, which is a wonderful thing that exists for fans of the MCU, is very much the, like, sanitized story of Marvel Studios. It's super interesting, but it's not all the stories. And actually what we heard is that there was a version of that book that existed that got thrown out entirely because it had too many, like, stories that they didn't want out there necessarily. And so on the one hand, Disney deciding they didn't want to help us, or they wanted to, in many cases, tell people not to talk to us, on the one hand, at first that felt like a massive roadblock, like an obstacle we can come back from. And then it started to feel like freedom to tell the real full story. You know, like, what do they not want people to know? And there's nothing, like, horribly damaging in our book. Like, we're Marvel fans. We're not out here to bury anyone. But I think sometimes, you know, the Disney culture in general is, don't pull back the curtain too much for people. You know, project, you know, that everything is running smoothly. And we know as fans from the, like, looking in from the outside, given the departure of Edgar Wright or the departure of Joss Whedon or, like, various things, that, like, it hasn't always been smooth sailing. So we have a lot of those stories in there that we wouldn't have been able to tell if Disney had given us that access. So it felt like actually a positive trade-off for us.
Yeah, and I think anything that we would have gotten to see that would have, you know, been projected forward, whether we were allowed to see it or not, people will have seen by the time the book comes out. So it wasn't beneficial for us necessarily. If it was about the creative process, we would get the creators to talk about it in the terms they were comfortable with. But yeah, it wouldn't. If we would have had seen, like, Andrew Garfield, you know, on a blue screen set like a year ago, it might have been very exciting to us, but it would have been completely different by the time it made the timeline the book's going to be in.
Now, with all the material that's gone into this book, Joanna, first, I guess, and or Dave, what size are we looking at? Is how big of a volume this is going to be, or is it still not completely finalized in that sense?
It's 500 pages, right, Dave?
Yeah, thereabouts, 485 to 500, I think.
Yeah. Is that your question?
Yeah, no, it is. So it's on the hefty side. That's fine. You know, it's got some girth to it. And
yeah.
as much as you can possibly pack in there by, you know, as restricted or whatever by law, permissible, that is.
Oh, Eddie.
Absolutely, yeah. Check out the index. We've got a very good index to help with the 500 pages. It's daunting.
This show is brought to you by our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/themarvelists. And on the $3 tier, you'll get access to episodes early and ad-free. The $5 tier gets you our two bonus shows. One, Fantastic Voyage, where we dissect and just talk about the 102 issues, one by one, although if it's a storyline, more than one at a time, of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's amazing, incredible, spectacular, invincible, and fantastic run of the Fantastic Four, the world's greatest comic magazine. And two, You Haven't Read That? A show dedicated to the comic books that I haven't read yet. Some Marvel, some DC, all fun. And on the $8 tier, pick a topic of your choosing, not a topping of your choice. Or perhaps you can be a guest on The Marvelists. Above all else, we thank you for your continued support.
So now, in regards to the future of the MCU, obviously, there's a lot going on in the world currently. You know, we just ended... COVID is kind of over, but not, maybe? Question mark? Who knows? But in regards to also other things with production, there's currently a writer strike going on, and people are wondering what's going to happen with the future of the MCU. And for ourselves, you know, we're excited for a lot of different projects, but we'd like to know what you guys are looking forward to and you feel could be maybe the next breakout hit in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, I think the pause, you know, they're in a sort of slightly mandated pause right now because of the writer's strike, and because various, you know, picket lines have shut down production on certain things, or certain things weren't, you know, the scripts weren't ready in time, et cetera. But I almost think it's a pause that they need, like, you know, to figure out. I think a big reckoning for them this year was the reception on Quantumania. Because my understanding is that internally they were really high on that movie. They thought it was going to be really well received, and it wasn't, both by critics and the fans. You know, it still made plenty of money, but it didn't make as much money as they wanted to, and a lot of people were dissatisfied with it. And I think that that misalignment between internal approval and external reception, I think, has them really reconsidering a lot of things. And so I think, you know, they, like all of us, just want everything to be good and for everyone to like it. And so if a WGA strike pause means that they get to figure some things out, maybe not, hopefully not, you know, crossing the line and writing anything, but to sort of like make their plans. They've already announced a bunch of delays for phase five, right? And then there's also, you know, we're recording this in June. We don't know what's going to happen between now and when this podcast comes out, but, you know, they had hung a lot of the future of the MCU on their plans with Jonathan Majors as Kang, and there's a lot going on with Jonathan Majors right now in the legal sense. And so the question is, are they going to go forward with their Kang plans? Are they going to scrap their Kang plans? Are they going to recast Kang? Like, my understanding is they were undecided, but I think the recent response to Ezra Miller's Flash has given them a data point about how people feel about a lead actor who's embroiled in a bunch of legal issues. And so that's a big, you know, throwing a wrench in their plans, because they had so much banking on Kang. And so that is something that they're grappling with right now. So I'm going to sidestep the Kang of it all. and I will shout out, I guess, Coven of Chaos, the Agatha Harkness. Because I loved WandaVision so much. It's between that and Fantastic Four, because I'm just so fascinated to see what they do with getting to start from scratch with such a beloved property. Yeah.
I personally would think...
I
was just going to say, just to add to what Joanna was saying, that perhaps if you need... If it is so, and it is very, very big, like Joanna said, with respect to Kang, that... And I'm drawing on the fact that Rhodey was a recast right at the beginning, but that might be what the lesser of the choices would be.
In the interest of fairness, he had a minor role in Loki, had a pretty damn big role in Quantumania, and he's almost the entirety of Loki season two. So, turns out he's really good at method acting, unfortunately. But yep.
Anyway, back to you, Dave.
Dave.
Oh yeah, I'm actually looking forward to not the multiverse stuff. I think multiversal storytelling is great for people that are really into the Easter eggs and the seeing old actors again. But I'm excited to see how the world changes for Captain America: Brave New World, because I think that's going to Civil War-like open up maybe the more grounded side of the Marvel Universe again. I mean, grounded in that you probably have a Hulk, but still grounded. And then beyond that, Daredevil coming back and having a full 18-episode Disney Plus run seems so different. And the fact that they brought back both Vincent D'Onofrio and Charlie Cox means that they have great confidence in those two. And I think Daredevil, street-level New York, but with a little bit of that Marvel magic, it could be a really winning formula. It could be the actual interconnected of it could be the lift that the Netflix series never got. If She-Hulk FaceTimes in with Matt Murdock to see how he's doing or something like that. That might be the little bit of extra dust it takes to make Daredevil work. Because I have all of these things for being a comic reader that I want to see on screen. And as I've aged along with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I've been checking those things off. But I still want to see like Daredevil, Wolverine, and Spider-Man inhabit one New York and how they all solve problems differently in their interpersonal relationships together. So if we could build to that, I would be very thankful. Kevin Feige, thank you.
It is weird because when Daredevil Born Again finally releases on the award-winning Disney Plus, what gets me about it is the fact that, I used to say this about the old Netflix universe before everything was retconned and, a wizard did it or something and, made it no longer canon or something. Who knows? But I always like the fact knowing the Punisher, that iteration of the Punisher at one point in time coexisted in the same universe as the Guardians of the Galaxy, with a talking tree and raccoon. And now it's weird to realize, the rumor innuendo, I think it is confirmed. It is confirmed with, what's his name? Johnny B, Johnny Bernthal, playing the role again of the Punisher and realizing the Punisher coexists in the same universe as Rocket Raccoon and Groot.
Yeah.
So it's so weird to realize.
And Vincent D'Onofrio keeps saying he's coming for Spider-Man, so I really got my fingers crossed on this one.
It's funny because, his appearance in Hawkeye, which, by the way, this is my opinion, might be actually one of the very best, on par with WandaVision of the supplemental or the Disney Plus MCU shows. But in regards to that, we might be getting Spider-Man family business, because we saw him going Kingpin Goes Hawaiian, and now we might be seeing that, in a future thing where he goes off and scares the ever-loving bejesus out of us with Spider-Man, because I want that so badly, because when I was a boy, we had Tugboat McGuire running around going doing his thing. I want to see it happen. So who knows?
Yeah.
And in regards to a lot of the stuff connecting over into the MCU, my personal theory is with all of this multiverse stuff, I have a weird feeling because Lego does some of their merchandising with the MCU minifigures they've been coming out with. And Wave 2 apparently is going to have something that lists it as Marvel Studios. You've never seen this with any other animated thing before, but MCU Marvel Studios presents X-Men 97. Does this mean technically that this animated series is going to tie into the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe, and maybe, just maybe, we end up seeing a cel-shaded Wolverine played by Cal Dodd running around alongside, all these other characters? It feels like it might be a possibility. You never know.
I mean, I think they're trying to connect it as much as they can with that, with the original theme song sound cues that we got in two different MCU properties. And it's definitely like it's made under the Marvel Studios MCU umbrella. I I feel like they're not going to try too hard to... I don't want to rain on your parade, though, so let's just say anything's possible in the multiverse. Sure, it could happen.
Well, let me ask you, Joanne.
Secret Wars, with the Spider-Verse trilogy, or two of the three movies being out right now, and all of them being so, critically and fandom has accepted them, I would not count a animated segment to Secret Wars out at all. I think that gives them like a bunch of freedom on that front. But I think Secret Wars is going to be, it's a big question mark for me, because I love the end of the Ultimate Universe when it was done in the comics. And I think, maybe Battle World is too much for one movie, but if they could figure out how to balance it, Battle World could be all your cameo dreams come true. But more importantly, you have different versions of the characters that can interact with, updated versions of characters from completely different properties. So, if you want an animated Juggernaut to, face off against the live-action Deadpool, that would be very possible in something like Secret Wars.
And by the way, Joanna, isn't it annoying they're calling it X-Men 97 when we all internally call it X-Men 92?
That's bizarre. Yeah, it is annoying.
Eddie?
Depends on how you write the numeral.
Oh, Eddie,
anyway,
Eddie.
The book, when we do get this book in front of us to have and to hold,
we'll have a book in our hands.
Yes, exactly. There'll need to be there'll be a celebratory on your end, of course, with champagne. Don't get it anywhere near the book party and so on. But are there plans or thoughts about like some kind of book signing and or tour type of thing?
Yeah, we're doing some events for sure. As we mentioned to you before we started recording, we're all three of us in different states. So I think we're going to hit our own states individually. Mm-hmm. And then there is a plan for us to come together in New York.
Yes.
Probably the weekend of New York Comic Con, but that's not locked in yet. But by the time your listeners are listening to this, it will be. So Dave, where can people find the best information about this?
Well, if you want, you could find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find Joanne on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. I imagine if this is around release time, you're very sick of hearing about talking about the book, but we're going to be doing a lot of that. And then if you go to the URL, themcubook.com, there should be a way that you could order the various ways you could order the book, and things like audiobook and signing opportunities. Will be added to that as they pop up.
In regards,
yeah, Dave is brilliant at snapping up like vanity URLs. So he grabbed the mcubook.com. So that should have a lot of the information that people are looking for.
For each of you guys, which would be the perfect person to do the audiobook from the MCU?
It's so funny. We were just talking about that right now. Dave, do you have a good answer for this?
It's going to be interesting because I'm going to give an answer and someone else will be the one who does it. But, who were you talking about actually from the X-Men, the animated series? You had a great,
Cal
great
Dunn.
Idea of getting like one of the animated series actors to do it.
I don't know. My answer was I want, how for a while there, because of the Russo brothers, et cetera, there was a lot of crossover between Community actors.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Six
so
seasons
I
of an audiobook.
Idea of, Danny Hoodie or Jim Rash or any of the Community actors who appeared in the MCU to do it just because we love Community so much.
So-
Or Ben Schwartz, who voiced MODOK in the in the Hulu show, that's probably not who's going to end up doing it. But we kind of we had some ideas of sort of people who have appeared on the margins. I don't think you want not that we could, but I don't think you want Chris Evans reading this or Robert Downey Jr. reading this. That would seem very odd, especially since there's quotes from them and their pals in there. But I think someone very marginal to the MCU or something we were considering. I'm not sure that's what we'll go with at the end of the day, but it's something we were talking about.
With Community, it could be six seasons in an audiobook. So
I, love it. Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, but why not get several, you know, instead of just making them more than one? That could be somewhat monotonous, I think.
Could always be Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, would be a great idea. Yeah.
But now in regards to, you know, what's next? What is next? I don't know.
Yeah, for us, TBD. For Marvel, two more phases and then Avengers movies. And like really, there's going to be a lot of waffling in fandom and I assume box office. With the Marvel releases between here and there. But a lot of people are always asking me if I'm, you know, concerned about where Marvel's going, if we're going to, like, lose the MCU. I think they've got so much leeway from that first three-phase run. For me, if an Avengers movie comes out and tanks, then party's over, start turning out the lights. So as long as I could keep pushing Kang Dynasty back, they're also keeping me optimistic for the future, because I think that's the big bar that Marvel has to clear for its future.
Yeah, I think Dave and I both, I think, get a little prickly around the phrase superhero fatigue, because I think it's people have just been saying it for like a decade. So I'm like, is that a real thing? And I think it's especially still, people are throwing it around right now, and I think that's, after the, again, we're recording this in June, like after what happened with The Flash, the phrase superhero fatigue is popping up all over the place. And I was like, okay, but I don't think you can say that in the span of when across the Spider-Verse and Guardians of the Galaxy 3 were massive, massive critical, fan box office hits. So, like, I don't think it's superhero fatigue. I think it's like bad movie fatigue. I think you can no longer expect that audiences are going to show up for anything with a cape and a cowl in it. But I don't think that audiences are done with superhero stories. I think they're just like, okay, but can you make them great, please? That would be wonderful. And then for us, we've got some ideas that we're noodling around, but we haven't decided exactly what we're doing next. So.
Very cool.
I do really agree with that, because when I first started hearing the term superhero fatigue, I said to myself, well, I'm so immersed, invested, whatever. I said, yeah, no, I can't think of that. My immediate knee-jerk reaction was, no, I love this stuff. It's great. Fans from decades ago seeing the stuff on the screen. When we, as podcasters ourselves, started doing The Marvelous, saying how great is it we live in a time that we can see these comic books come to life on a big screen. And I think as time progresses, people age, parents pass down to kids. We, in every age and time, and it sounds from somewhere, we need our heroes, and there's times where we're going to turn to them for whatever reason, on whatever level, but we need them to be there. They help us escape, cope, etc., make us happy, go through a range of emotions, like crying at least three times in Guardians Volume 3, stuff like that.
And let me say, there is definitely a lot of coping involved in the world of superhero stuff. Let's just ask any Zack Snyder fan. But I digress, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy the veal. But so... But in regards to, what is next, I'm excited just to see, what we can get. Obviously not everything's going to hit, but, still, if I'm not enjoying it, hey, I will admit I'm not enjoying it. And, I have my complaints, but guess what? We all have our complaints. My back hurts. I've had a long day, but I digress.
Yeah.
Anyway. How can people get a hold of you on them, thar social medias? Joanna, you first, and then Dave.
I'm at Joe Rosis on all social media, and I've got a website, joerosis.com.
And I'm at DA7E. That's how I spell Dave on Twitter. I am Grumpy DA7E on Instagram. And you could check out what's happening with the book right now by going to themcubook.com.
Dave, that sounds like your favorite of the Seven Dwarfs.
Yes. It's a magical number in the magical kingdom, that's for sure.
Dave, when I saw your name on social media, the DA7E, for some reason my brain is dumb and I just read it as Days. So anytime I saw you on there, that's why when we got the email in regards to this episode, I was like, oh my God, we're going to have Days on the show.
Yeah.
So
Days works. Dave with a seven. I just got it because, Twitter used to limit your number of characters.
Yeah.
And they would include the name of the person you were replying to. So I just wanted as much feedback as people could give me. So four characters for the win.
So Joanna, Dave, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. And we are looking forward to seeing what is next, not just with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but your literary careers as well. Thank you again.
Thanks.
Thanks, Peter and Eddie.
For the Marvelists, I'm Peter Melnick.
I'm Joanna Robinson.
I'm Dave Gonzalez.
And I'm Eddie Wilson. Excelsior!